Sorry.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Starving for God DBA workshop. I'm Deb. This workshop, I'm just so excited that we get to be here. We're in step two today, and I know I've been saying up until this point that this workshop is getting free from your food issues and your body image issues, but really what we're looking at is getting more freedom in every area of your life than you ever thought possible. So I'm really, really excited to be here with you. So let's see who else is on the line. So again, I'm Deb. I'm from San Diego, compulsive eater, restrictor, chaos creator, Al-Anon, drug addict, lots and lots of different fun things. Who else do we have here today?
Hi, it's Lynn, compulsive eater, drug addict from Sherman Oaks. And I'm sure I'm lots of other things, just undiagnosed at this point.
Hi, Lynn.
This is Tammy in San Diego. I'm a food addict, bulimic, alcoholic addict.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi, this is Cammy from Visalia.
Hi, Cammy.
Hi, this is Katie G, food addict. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Kimberly Lavessa Ross, compulsive eater, drug addict from Tahunga, California.
Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, Katie G, food addict, alcoholic, and I'm sure many other things as well. Hi.
Hi, Katie.
This is Stephanie.
This is Adela from
food addict from Livermore, California.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
This is Suzanne from San Mateo, and I'm a compulsive overeater, Al-Anon, alcoholic, clutterer, Al-Anon, etc. Thanks.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, this is Adela from San Diego, and I'm an Al-Anon, but I'm also a chaos creator, and I use my food allergies and health issues to create chaos.
Hi, Adela.
This is Deb from San Diego, Deb C., and I'm a compulsive overeater and addict.
Hi, Deb.
Hi.
Hi, this is Sue from Sausalito.
Hi, Sue. So glad that you're on the call.
Hi. I'm glad I am, too. I'm a compulsive overeater, food addict, bulimic, drama queen, alcoholic. You name it, I do it.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, it's Deb. Well, Deborah King from Encinitas. Hello, Debbie.
Hi, Deb. Hi.
Hi.
Lauren S. from Pittsburgh.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
Okay. Anyone else? Going once? Okay. So before we dive into our prayer and meditation, just want to go over the homework. We are moving into assignment 12. We're going into step 3. Woohoo! Moving along. So just read from your sponsorship guide your assignment for assignment 12, and it's going to have you do a reading for the week. So go ahead and make sure that you have that you've done that assignment thoroughly, and then at the very end of the Idiot's Guide, there's this long passage that comes out of the big book, and the instruction there is to read that out loud every day for a week to your step partner, ideally someone in this group or someone in the program. And even if your step partner is not available, I've done it before, just like reading it into someone's voice machine. So you can do that as well, but it's really, really powerful to read that passage. And I, instead of reading it the way that it has in the Idiot's Guide where it uses the word I actually use my name. Debbie's like the actress who wants to run the whole show, and it really creates a very, very powerful experience. So enjoy that transcribing. Enjoy what you get to see in that. And that's about all I will say about step three at this point, because we're not there yet. So where we are, so yeah, go ahead and make sure that you are that you're muted, that you have star six yourself. I don't want to press the mute thing again, because otherwise it's going to mute you all and you won't be able to unmute yourself. So let's say our set-aside prayer for step two. I need to come to believe in a power greater than myself, and then we'll go into a few minutes of meditation. So, God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth about my need to come to believe in a power greater than myself. Okay. So I'm not going to share for a super long time because I really, really want to hear from each one of you and hear your answers to the Idiot's Guide questions. Really want to hear that and dive into that discussion and answer any questions that people might have. But I do have a little bit to share. So just taking us back always in review of where we are, you know, this book tells me that this is a basic text, and I look to this book to teach me how to do life. That's a personal thing. I do. This book tells me how to do life. And up until now, you know, when I'm in my first step, I look at how I've been doing life with no power and using food and restricting to cope with my problems and to essentially be my solution to this constant, restless, irritable, and discontent kind of place that I'm always in or that I always find myself back in, like my operating platform. And so that's what we were doing in step one. We were looking at powerlessness and insanity in body, mind, and spirit. And my body can't control the amount that I do once I put it in my system, my mind that tells me it's going to be different or that it's okay this time or I got this. And the insanity of my spirit, you know, that I think that I can learn the tools of the program and then I can go ahead and self-will spiritual growth. And so I look at the way that I've been living and in every area of my life, and I come to see that lack of power is my dilemma. And what we looked at as we were coming off of step one, moving into step two, was this idea that lack of power wasn't a dilemma when food and restricting and my acting out behavior was still working for me. It was my solution, and it was working. You know, and we got that list of the promises. You know, when I was acting out around food, did I know a new freedom and a new happiness? Damn straight, you know. Like I felt like my problems were solved, at least temporarily. But it became a dilemma when I started to see the destruction of all things that I hold dear, when I started to feel dead inside and I wanted to stop or change and I found that I couldn't do any different. And then it was a dilemma. And so this work gets me to a place where I see that I have to change or else I'm going to die, either physically or spiritually, and I can't do it on my own power. And so as we move into step two, what we're looking at is this option, my only option, is to accept spiritual help. And so we've got these two questions in step two. And the first half of step two is all about, am I willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? Not am I willing to believe in a power greater than myself, but just that there is a power greater than myself, or that there is a power greater than myself that can take me further in every area of my life than I ever thought possible, right, if you've done the work before. The second half is asking, is God everything or is God nothing? What is my choice to be? Either God is everything or God is nothing. What is my choice to be? Okay, so we're going to look at that in a moment. But so just to review last week, we were looking at the first question, right? And so on page 45, it says, we've shared his honest doubt and prejudice. And so it's asking me to look at my honest doubt and prejudice, and it's asking me to look not just from my childhood. It goes into a whole discussion about that and stuff that I have from my past. But I also need to look at my honest doubt and prejudice in present day. And this is a beautiful meditation. I did this earlier in the week and asked God to help me see the truth about my present day honest doubt and prejudice. And some of the things that came up, and I started writing some of the things that I remember also coming up, because as I told you all, I just finished doing the steps and so I have all of this, like, very, very recent step work that, you know, so I'm remembering some of the stuff there, too, and some of the stuff that I am in have a different attitude about now, today. It's incredible, but but so I wanted to reflect on some of those things. So some honest doubt and prejudice that just came up for me very recently. Working for God means I have to work without getting paid. So I had these, like, to follow God's will for me means a life of being poor. That was this, like, honest doubt about, like, God working in my life around around money or around economic security. And also as in the kind of a second to that or adjunct to that was to want a life of wealth is selfish and self-serving. So I kind of had this whole issue. And so I was holding back with my money and my finances from God. I got to see that this last time through the steps. And also some honest doubt, like if I give up my will and my life to God, that God's going to want me to be fat and poor and single. And I'm going to have to sacrifice. I'm going to have to sacrifice what I want to do. I'm going to have to sacrifice fun. I'm going to have to sacrifice pleasure in order to do God's will. And so these were some of the things, honest doubt and prejudice. And so in this meditation just now, as we were just taking a few minutes in meditation, another piece of honest doubt and prejudice just landed in my lap. And I realized that this has been something that I've been operating under is, if I share how good things are going, I'm going to jinx it and it'll go away. I just realized that that's another thing. So it's like, ooh, I don't want to share too much about how great things are. I don't trust that that God can hold that. If I share that, then I'm being arrogant, and then God's going to take that away from me. So I kind of have this, like, this doubt that, you know, God's just, like, beaming infinite love and power at me. That, like, I kind of have this belief like God's going to take it away. So I really encourage you to sit with what those honest doubt and prejudice things are for you, because I find that that's really powerful. And then the book tells me on the next page, on page 46, that doesn't really matter what I call God or what my approach to finding my own conception of God is. I think we're on page 50. But it does say in the middle of page 50, on one proposition, however, these people are strikingly agreed. Every one of them has gained access to and believes in a power greater than themselves. And that's what I'm trying to get to. And is that how I am living today if I've done the work before? Can I flatly declare that since I've come to believe in a power greater than myself and to take a certain attitude towards that power and do certain simple things, that there's been a revolutionary change in my way of thinking and living? And do I believe that that is possible? If I'm looking at my food stuff for the first time, do I believe that it's possible, or do I believe it's possible to go further in this area? In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of my human resources, do I believe that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction can flow into me as long as I wholeheartedly meet a few simple requirements? And I have experienced this change, this revolutionary change in my way of thinking and my way of living. And, I mean, even just from a few weeks ago, I cannot actually believe, I cannot believe the grace of this program. I cannot believe the gratitude that I feel in my heart and the reflection of what I'm seeing around me in my life. And I'll speak more about that when we get into looking at the bedevilments in a different way. But today I absolutely can say that the consciousness, meaning the state of being awake, from the definition that we talked about last time, the consciousness of the presence of God is the most important fact of my life today. And I experience that, and I experience the fruits of that dedication and that relationship. It's really, really, really awesome. So on page 51, it's going to get into talking about my skepticism. and what's blocking me from my readiness to accept the realm of the spirit. And so we get kind of towards the lower half of that first full paragraph. It says, in the realm of the material, men's minds were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. Some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought around Earth preposterous. Others came near putting Galileo to death for his astronomical heresies. So, and, you know, you remember, probably remember from history class that Galileo was the one who was saying that the Earth revolved around the sun, and everyone was like, oh my goodness, that's a heresy. And so they give me this example, and so I always extract the relevancy for me or how this actually applies to me. And so I ask myself, well, what beliefs are holding me back from experiencing God or from experiencing my higher power or from experiencing my higher power in this moment? What am I holding on to? What are my superstitions and what are my traditions and what are my fixed ideas about what God is and what God isn't and what God has been for me in the past? It's just a great question. And we asked ourselves in the next paragraph, are not some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as were the ancients about the realm of the material? And we talked about last time the Wright brothers. And, you know, they were afraid to print the account of the Wright brothers. They didn't even trust, even after it happened, they didn't trust that this was actually real. And yet, what did the Wright brothers have? The Wright brothers had this, they just had this knowing. They had this absolute abject faith that it was going to work. And it did. And, you know, on the next page, it's going to talk about this term childish faith. And I love to consider that. Like, what does that actually mean to me? What's having a childish faith mean? And for me, when I think of a childish faith or a childlike, I keep on saying childish, it's actually, it is a childish faith. Is this, you know, a child is like full of wonder and awe and trust and doesn't hold on to resentment or emotions, you know, like with kids, it's like they're fighting in one moment and then they're hugging and laughing at the next moment and like emotions kind of roll in and roll out of them and they don't judge them or harbor stuff. Kids are just like they're very, very present. So these are some of the qualities that it's asking me to cultivate. And I love this at the bottom of the page on 51. It says, had not people said that God had reserved this privilege, right, flying, privilege to the birds. And I remember actually hearing someone in our group in the BBA in San Diego actually did an entire 15-minute talk just on that phrase, to the birds. Because where am I still saying, oh, that's for you over there. That's not going to work for me. I'm different. You might be able to do that, but it's not going to work for me. It's interesting just to ask ourselves that question. And then on page 52, in that first full paragraph, kind of halfway down, it says, is not our age characterized by the ease with which we discard old ideas for the new, by the complete readiness which we throw away the theory or gadget which does not work from something new which does? And I know we spoke about that before when we were looking at the spiritual malady, where, like, who looks forward to upgrading their iPhone or getting a new computer? Or, you know, typewriters were out, computers were in, and now computers and desktops are out and laptops are in, and now it's iPads and it's mobile this, and it's, you know, we're constantly upgrading. We're constantly saying, oh, that's obsolete. And so it's asking us to have that same attitude about how I'm living my life. And so what are they asking me to actually change my point of view about? You know, we've already looked a lot at the bedevilments themselves. I don't want to dive into the bedevilments a ton right now. But what are they actually asking me to change my point of view about? And I believe that they're wanting me to see that all of these things that we see in the bedevilments are my problem. That the results of how I act out with food, right, like what I see in my life, the results out here, that's not my problem. But that the problem is on the inside. It's my spiritual unrest. It's my spiritual malady, my unmanageability. And that's all on the inside. And that's what they're asking me to switch my point of view about, take it from looking out there to looking in here. And so I look at in here, and I look at the malady that has, you know, when I'm running on no power, I'm having trouble in personal relationships because I need too much from them, and I'm in it for what I can get and not what I can give. And I'm, you know, I have unmanageability in my emotional nature. My emotions can just take me down, and I make my decisions based on temporary feelings and emotions, making a decision, you know, when I'm angry, and they control me, and I'm a prey to misery and depression, unhappiness. I can wake up grumpy and unhappy and negative and judging everyone and everything, and just snide and sarcastic, and I have a feeling of uselessness or lack or inadequacy or like not enough. That's where the not enough comes in a lot. And my fears own me. I live my life based on fears and trying to avoid pain. And this is what my life is like when I'm running on no power, or when I'm running on my power, which is no power. And so the book is asking me, can I see that lack of power in all of these areas is my problem? And then it's asking me, are you willing to consider that a simple reliance upon a spirit of the universe can actually solve your problem? That's what it says. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. And I might be able to actually bring more peace and more joy and more love to all of these areas. Is that possible? You know, I go to God empty when I'm starting this work. And in the process, I get filled up. And today, I feel like I interact with people from a place of being filled by God. And I look at the scene that's painted around me, and I see healthy and meaningful relationships. I see love. I see respect, contribution. I see miracles that I can't even beyond my wildest. And joy, like that's what's reflected back to me. You know, I'm still in the lake, and I'm looking at that painting, and I'm actually seeing this beautiful scene that's being reflected back to me. And that's how I know that as a result of doing this work and continuing to grow in understanding and effectiveness and staying in 10, 11, and 12, and continuing to do my ninth step and getting right with God on a daily basis, that I get to live in this place of spiritual fitness. And so I can look at each one of those areas. And that's what we get a chance to do. And so today, I go to God with my problems. I mean, and it doesn't mean that life is perfect and rosy, not at all. Like, right now, personal relationships. So I can look at it, okay, so I'm dating someone right now who was a friend of mine, and we decided to, you know, explore things further. And we have so much fun together, and I like him, but I don't think that he's the one, and I don't know what to do about that. Like, I don't know if there's anything to do about that, and I don't know what God's will is for me in that area. And so today, I don't need to know, and I don't need to call my best friend. I don't need to call three people. I don't need to call my sponsor. This is what I take into my prayer and meditation. I go to God. I say, God, who will you have me be? You know, I open up the page that talks in the big book about my sex ideal, and I pray for each questionable situation, and I listen for guidance. And that is, for me today, what it looks like to be running on God. It doesn't mean that I have the perfect answer or that I do things perfectly or anything like that. In fact, perfection is very much a part of my disease. So I'm not doing this work to be perfect. I'm doing this work to get right with God. And when I'm faced with indecision or doubt, I have this infinite source of power and love that is holding my highest at all times that I can just turn to and say, hey, can you guide me here? I don't know. I don't know how to honor your kids in this life without your guidance. Align my will with yours. Who will you have me be? Thy will be done. And then I get an intuitive hit. I can relax and take it easy. And this is how it works. And so am I seeing that? Am I seeing that in my life, or am I seeing that when I go into the room? You know, am I seeing people who have a reliance upon the spirit of the universe? And as a result of doing this work, can I be that? Can I be that going into those rooms? Can I be that for other people so that they can see that this really works? So on page 53, we get into this whole discussion about logic. Logic is great stuff. We liked it. We still like it. It's not by chance that we are given the power to reason, to examine the evidence of our senses, right? Step one. And to draw conclusions like I'm powerless. This is one of our magnificent attributes. We agnostically inclined would not feel satisfied with a proposal which does not lend itself to reasonable approach, step one, and interpretation, step two. Hence we are at pains, by the way, means try very hard. I looked that up because I wanted to know. So hence we try very hard to tell why we think our present state is reasonable and why we think it more sane and logical to believe than not to believe. Okay. So here we're getting into the crux of the second question in the second step. When we became compulsive eaters and restrictors, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else God is nothing. God either is or God isn't. What is my choice to be? So, imposed by crisis we could not postpone or evade. I love always just, you know me, I love asking present day, right? So, how am I postponing or evading this choice right now? Are there ways that I'm postponing or evading this choice right now? Are there ways that I'm living like there's no God? Because it's very easy for me to read this and say, oh, I do have God. Yep, I get it. Mm-hmm. Check off that box. And it's actually a great definition for God. Like, I don't need to understand God. I just need to know that God is everything, and he is. A great definition. You can even just start there. But when I look at this, either God is everything or else what? Well, God is nothing. Well, then what is everything? Well, am I living like what? I'm everything? So I did this meditation, and these are some of the themes that came up that I wanted to just, if you haven't meditated on this, like where am I living like there is no God, I just want to give you some fodder, some fuel. Because these were some of the areas where I haven't been bringing God in, and some of them where I still can see that I can use more God. So how am I experiencing my body? Am I obsessed? Am I judging? Am I disconnected? Am I abusive? Am I negligent? How am I experiencing money or lack thereof? My attitudes around money, my behavior around money. How am I experiencing others? Am I judging? Am I comparing? Do I think I know what's best for them? Am I strategizing, controlling? How am I behaving around relationships or sex? Do I have fears of intimacy or themes of entitlement or feeling victimized or needing validation or negative self-talk or like morbid reflection like no one wants me or I'm not worthy or I'll never get blah, 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 blah? Am I making decisions from fear? Like, I need to feel safe, or I want attention or validation or acceptance, or I want to belong. I have to look at how I'm self-sabotaging by creating chaos and distraction. So these are just some of the themes that came up, and as you sit in meditation, maybe you'll get directed towards other things. I mean, obviously, the big glaring one is food, my attitudes around food, my behavior with food, food thoughts. So where in my life, present day, am I living like there is no God? Because if I can see that I'm living in the areas that I just mentioned, or in any of the areas above, like there's no God. And if we've just said that God is everything or else God is nothing, then can I see that despite my belief in God, I'm actually living like God is nothing? Because God can't be halfway. God is everything or God is nothing. And I'm living in certain areas of my life like God is nothing. So then I'm actually living like God is nothing. And so what does that mean? Well, if God is nothing, then what's everything? Then I'm everything. And so that means that I've been playing God. And we're going to look at this in a lot more detail in step three. So again, I don't want to dive into this theme essentially because we're going to be talking about it a lot next week. But we do get to see in this moment the insanity of how we've been living here. And so I definitely want to hear, when we get into our discussion, I want to hear your Idiot's Guide answers and what life is like for you when God is nothing, because this is really, really powerful, and I feel like we can look at the general, and then we can look at the very, very specific about how I'm acting present day or how I'm acting in like very, very specific situations when I'm operating from the standpoint of God is maybe something but not everything, which essentially means that God is nothing, and so then I'm everything, and I'm relying on self. So, and I don't know if you saw my in my email that I sent out yesterday, but for those of you who haven't done this yet, this is a great meditation to do for a week or a couple of days, or when you're working with other people, invite them to do this. Or I know there's a few people who are on the call who are just starting with the work, who haven't gotten to this place of step two yet. Meditate on God is nothing. Just take that to meditation. I have a visceral, when I take that to meditation, I have a visceral experience with that. Like my body actually gets cold, and I actually feel like I've just, like, something's just been cut off. It's really strange, and it's almost like this past time when I was doing it, I had that physical reaction, but then it was like the part of me, you know, because we talked before about, like, this perverse streak comes out that always wants to point out, like, oh, no, that's not really, you know, God working in your life, or that's not, God's not going to work in my life. You know, we have this perverse streak that likes to, like, crop up, and that's our agnostic temperament. But as I was trying to do this meditation, I actually couldn't get there. Like, the consciousness of the presence of God was so real, and the fundamental notion that God is deep down within every man, woman, and child was so present for me that I found that I was almost like praying to God to ask God to help me to experience God nothing. Like, God is nothing. It's like I couldn't, like, I actually was having a hard time getting there, and that was a really interesting and new experience for me around that. And so arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason, and notice that reason in this paragraph is capitalized. They want me to know that this has been something that I've been treating like a god. Bridge of reason toward the desired shore of faith. The outlines and the promise of the new land had brought luster to tired eyes and fresh courage to flagging spirits. Friendly hands had stretched out in welcome. I always think of that as the people in the meetings, you know, as a fellowship. Friendly hands stretched out in welcome. We were grateful that reason had brought us so far, but somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps we'd been leaning too heavily on reason that last mile, and we did not like to lose our support. I get this image when I read that paragraph of, like, being in the middle of the ocean and seeing the shore, and I'm drowning, and I'm gripping onto this, like, not even a raft, like a shard of a raft. Like, the raft already broke a long time ago, and I'm just kind of, like, gripping and holding on to this plank of wood. And in order to get to shore, I need to swim to shore, but I can't swim as long as I'm holding on. And so what do I need to do? I have to let go. I've got to let go entirely of what I'm holding on to, that I'm free to move in the water and to swim ashore. And so that analogy works really well for me because it helps me to just get a very practical example and an image of what it is that I need to do on a spiritual level. And then it goes into this discussion of, have we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? And so now we're going to go into how I've actually been abjectly faithful to the God of reason and to my mind and to what I think I know. And that's why we started this work with setting aside everything that I think that I know for an open mind and a new experience, because everything that comes before this moment in time is blocking me from the experience I could be having in this moment in time with my Creator. And so I've been putting faith and belief and trust in everything that I know. And am I willing to set all that aside? And like we talked about last week, what is God? What is truth? What is real? It will come back to you. It's not asking you to throw it away. It's just asking you to set it aside. And then we get this awesome description of all the various things that I've worshipped. So we found, too, that we've been worshippers. Not only had I been abjectly faithful, I've already been doing this faith thing for a while, but that I've actually been a worshipper. And then I look at, what are all the different things that I've been worshipping? What have I been placing on the altar in my life? I've been placing people. I've been placing feelings. I've been placing stuff. I'm a stuffologist. Money, food, prestige. For me, fitness, status, relationships, work. I even have to look at how I have placed this program on the altar. You know, where I've been self-willing spiritual growth and worshiping the meetings or the fellowship, worshiping my sponsor, worshiping the steps or slogans like Meeting Makers Make It and Just Don't Overeat and things like that. Food plans, where I've been abjectly faithful and, restrictive and rigid. around worshiping a food plan over worshiping God and being guided to what I should eat as as God would have me be. So the paragraph reads, and ourselves, myself, have I been worshiping myself? And it's an interesting one, because I know so many of us are like, oh, I've got such a low self-esteem, and I wouldn't be worshiping myself. But there's, you know, that distinction between, not thinking highly of ourselves. I don't want to go too deeply into step three, because it talks about this again, but the selfishness and the self-centeredness and, you know, what I think about myself and, like, how often I think about myself. There's actually stuff for me to look at there. So let me not just pass that one off, fob that one off, and say, oh, no, I haven't ever worshipped myself, because I have. The way that I see things, who I think that I am, you know, my identity, I absolutely have put myself on that altar and made decisions playing God based on that. And then with a better motive, have we not worshipfully beheld a sunset or the sea or a flower, right, something beautiful in nature, the mountains, a beautiful vista? Who of us has not loved something or somebody? And how much did this feeling or these loves or these worships have to do with pure reason? I mean, anyone who has been in love, anyone who has a child or a family member knows the experience of loving someone, and it's completely unreasonable. Completely, love is completely unreasonable. And so it says, little or nothing. No, my worship of these things that is not based on reason. It's based on something just unreasonable, much deeper than that or much different than that. And were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. Ooh, they got us there. It's a good one. It's a really, really good one. And so at the bottom there, it says, we saw that reason isn't everything. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable. And so it's asking me to take this leap of faith. And speaking of leaping, on the next page, on page 55, it says we've been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems. They said, God made these things possible, and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. So is that what's happening? Do you see people who are rising above their problems, and then do you say, that's nice for you, but I don't know that that's entirely true, or that's not entirely going to work for me that way? Actually, the book says we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. So here it's going to tell me exactly how to find this power and exactly where to find this power. It's deep, deep down within. It may be obscured by calamity, right, by chaos, by drama. You know, a few of us identify as being chaos creators and clutterers. By pomp, by ego, by worship of other things. But in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves, and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. And so we finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. And that's a great consideration, too. What are some of the qualities that I consider in a really, really good friend? You know, can I turn to that person? They're non-judgmental. They're accepting. Unconditional. What are those qualities? Sometimes we have to search fearlessly. That's telling me how to do it. But he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. That's where. In the last analysis, it is only there that God can be found. It was so with us. And that is a promise. This text is written so well. I mean, it really, it's powerful stuff here. And when, I just encourage you to sit with these things, is just to really sit with what these terms mean to you and what this passage means to you and what the great reality means within, the great reality means to you. And then it says, we can only clear the ground a bit. I feel that way, too. In this moment, I'm like, I swear, it's so great. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, so this is telling me exactly what I need to do. Think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, and if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. And then here's a major promise. With this attitude, you cannot fail. So we keep on getting this reference to a certain simple attitude. This is the attitude that they're talking about. As long as I am willing to sweep away prejudice, think honestly, and search diligently, I can't fail. I can't fuck up as long as I do these things. That is huge. That's a huge, huge promise. The consciousness, state of awakeness of your belief is sure to come. So we have this transcribed, or I don't know if it's transcribed or if it's just my note, but I'm going to read it anyway. If I can lay aside my prejudice about God, if I can think honestly, if I've been encouraged to search diligently within myself, then I can find God. There it is. And the book goes into this story of this minister's son, and at the bottom of the page here, I did want to just read these two, these transcribed notes that you have at the bottom of page 55. Great questions. Do I believe I can find the great reality within myself if I search fearlessly? And do I believe that God reveals himself to me as I reveal myself to me? Oh, it's beautiful. So beautiful. So on page 56, in the middle paragraph, This guy, he bitterly cries out, if God is there, if there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. And so I love to just ask myself, and when I'm taking people through the work, where is that cry hiding out in you today, in this moment? It's a great consideration, just a consideration. Who am I to say that there is no God in a world that shows me that there is? Or who am I to say that there isn't a power that can free me and take me further in every area of my life than I ever thought possible? Who am I to say that there isn't? And what if there was? It's like such an incredible, oh my gosh. And so in the next paragraph, a few lines down, says the barriers that this man had built through the years were swept away. And he stood in the presence of infinite power and love. I love that definition for God. That's a beautiful definition for God, infinite power and love. It's a great starting point in my conception of God. He had stepped from bridge to shore. For the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with his Creator. And this was our friend's cornerstone fixed in place, right? The willingness to believe, willing to believe. And on page 57, it says at the end of that, the top paragraph, he could not use or act out around food, even if he would. God had restored his sanity. And we have that story from page 43, more about alcoholism. I wouldn't go back to it even if I could, but there was no choice. Because I didn't regain choice. It was, the problem was removed. And I can't go back to it. I've reached a place, and I'm experiencing that, folks. I'm experiencing that with food right now. And a few weeks ago, it wasn't that way, right? But, like, that's what I am experiencing today. And I'm actually experiencing this stuff, like this place of neutrality, safe and protected. And it's absolutely contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual growth. So it says circumstances made him willing to believe. Circumstances made him willing to believe, step one. And he humbly offered himself to his maker. He then knew. Even so, God has restored us all to our right minds. For this person, it came suddenly. Some of us grow into it more slowly, but he has come to all who have honestly sought him. I love this line. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. As I begin to see the truth, he will show me the way. And as Tyla always says, let God teach you about God. I just love that. So my summary for step two is very, very simple. Step two is about me seeing my need for power. Step one is about me seeing my lack of power. Step two is me seeing my need for power. And the rest of the steps are about me gaining access to that power. So at this time, I want to open the call and just a few guidelines just to keep aware. Just watch the clock as you're sharing. Like to kind of keep the shares to about 4 minutes or under. And I'd love for everybody who introduced themselves to have an opportunity to share. So if you've already shared, just maybe give an opportunity for somebody else to share. And if there's like a long gap where nobody's spoken, you know, you can come back on the line. And but let's get some folks who haven't spoken before, who haven't maybe wanted to speak before, the opportunity to share their answers. And what I'd like to hear are, like, if you wanted to take maybe one or two of the bedevilment themes, you know, like personal relationships or emotional nature, something like that. And if you wanted to share, if God is nothing, what life would be like for you? And then if God is everything, what life would be like for you? And you can share on one or two of them. So at this time, I'll just open up the call. Go ahead and unmute yourself by pressing *6, and we can get into that discussion.
Hi, this is Adela.
Hi, Adela.
Hi. I guess what for me that this exercise was harder for me this time around, the God is everything, God is nothing, because it was so much like the tools that I've been given are why I'm here. And I didn't come to this consciousness of having issues with food on my own. And so it was really hard, but it was good because it helped me to see that my problem is that I need to continue to do the work in order for me to gain more understanding of how God works in my life. So I just want to share on the bedevilment fear.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference that I have when I'm using my tools on a daily basis is that I can experience fear without staying in it. Like I can have that moment of, oh, I'm scared, but I don't act on it.
Uh-huh.
Whereas when God is nothing and I experience fear, it stays there. And then I make choices based off of that fear.
Mm-hmm.
And those are my choices. Instead of turning it over to God and saying, God, here's my fear. You know, why am I experiencing this? It will stay, and I won't ever work through it. It just stays there, and it lingers, and it festers, and it just makes me feel discontented even more, and then I do crazy things. So that's mm-hmm. pretty much what I would like to share about.
Do you have any examples of fear?
Yeah, so like a really good example would be like I'm afraid to eat out at restaurants because I'm afraid that there's not going to be a gluten-free option for me, and that I'm going to go in and I'm going to have like, you know, that I'm going to be afraid to not eat normally, like, and that people will be like, oh, well, why are you doing this gluten-free thing? You know, why can't you just be normal?
Mm-hmm.
And not be able to have the words to explain to them that it's an allergy and that I, you know what I mean, that I can't have it in my body because it turns me not just physically into physical pain, but also, you know, with the physical pain comes discontent, and so I'm afraid of A, the physical pain, and I'm afraid of all these things, and the chain just goes on and on and on. Whereas if I turn it over to God and just say, you know, God, just guide me and remove this fear from me, I can have a normal social interaction with people, and then I can express myself without getting upset or angry or deciding to people please and wanting to be normal and holding my tongue about what my food allergy is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to accommodate everyone else's wants and needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
yeah.
feeling judged for that.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for extrapolating. Awesome. Thank you for your share. Who else wants to share?
This is Deb C. From San Diego. I wanted to answer, if that's okay, number 14.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, have you stuck to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve your problems? I'm just blown away how much I did that, my whole recovery. You know, I just look back and reflect on it years and years and not getting this at all. It's kind of sad to me in a way, but like I was an addict and I got into recovery, and I have said before, I put down the spoon and picked up the fork. And when I look back, I just think, you know, I got a lot of good things in those years, and I was doing the footwork and being a sponsor and doing service committees and stuff like that, but I just never got that I was running on self-will. On a deep level. And so this is just, it's just such a gift to get this truth, you know, and every day I just think of it as such a gift, and I'm just really grateful that now I know what the wrong path I was on in all those years, and that I do get to have a solution today. So
mm-hmm.
that's what I wanted to share.
Thanks, Deb.
You bet.
This is Katie G. from Boston. May I share?
Hi, Katie. Sure.
Hi. So I wanted to share on personal relations and making a living. I said, you know, with God being nothing, I must manage my personal relations and decide who's going to be in my life for how long and what their role must be. And I get angry with people when they don't call me back and they don't want to follow my role. And I must decide, like, how to treat them and what they need from me and what my purpose is. With God mm-hmm. being everything, that I'm letting go and trusting God is sending me who I need, what I need, when I need, for as long as I need it. And I would invite God in to each relationship. And I wouldn't be looking for people at work to, like, make me feel good. I wouldn't be gossiping at work, and I wouldn't evaluate the way other people are behaving. Like, I would just ask God how I can be of service to them. And then in terms of making a living, I said, if God is nothing, I'll ask my boss how to get promoted within the first couple weeks of my job, which I did in my first job out of college. I'm obsessing about hours and money. I'm working overtime. It's all I can think about. I feel like people are stealing my hours. I'm edgy. I'm jealous. And I can't think of anything else. And I'm not being of maximum service to anybody. If God is everything, then I won't live in fear. Like, I'll have it, but I'll ask God, like, where he wants me to be, and remember that God is my employer, and he will direct me to who and what and where to be. And this fear and obsession about, like, not making ends meet and whatnot, that obsession and delusional thinking that when I get what I think I need, I'll be okay, will disappear. And with that, I pass.
Thank you. Awesome shares, everyone.
Hi, this is Stephanie. Can I share?
Love it. Yeah.
I'd like to answer the if God is nothing about personal relationships and can you control your emotional nature. So if God is nothing with regard to my personal relationships, my relationships will not grow. I will give in to isolation, negative comparisons. My world will be small, and loneliness will return. If God is everything, I have richer connections, the possibility of being of greater service to others, and I'm a clearer channel for God to use me. For can you control your emotional nature? What if God is nothing? God is nothing. I run off of my feelings. I'm blindly driven by my impulses, my urges, my wants. I'm grabbing when I can get out of life, and I'm in a state of constant agitation. If God is everything, I have greater peace. I have the ability to pause. I have intuitive thought. That's all. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you, Stephanie.
Hi, it's Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I'd like to share on the making a living and am I unhappy. So, and I find it so interesting when I work with people and now for me in this experience because I've had a job in my, before sobriety, during sobriety, and, you know, as well as abstinence, and yet they can be so different when I'm with God and not without God. So in making a living without God, I'm not satisfied with my job. I need I need constant validation and reassurance that I'm okay. I'm not getting along with people, or I'm judging others and especially myself so harshly about not being smart enough. I'm ineffective. And then that restlessness and irritability and discontentment, when I'm in it too long, I relapse. And then I'm really ineffective. And alternatively, with God, I'm open to working in collaboration and cooperation with others. I don't need to take credit for what I do, and I don't need the constant reassurance and validation from others because, as someone else said, God is my employer, and I'm way more efficient. And, you know, I even see this, you know, in the last few months, you know, through the food relapse, just how different I was. And I was talking to my step buddy, also just how quickly my mind goes to suicide. I mean, literally, I stay in that state without God and in the food for a very short period of time, and my solution is to not live. I mean, and it's really a scary place to be. So, and, you know, I want to share on am I unhappy? And I related this to something specific that's going on in my life. And a good friend of mine, his health situation isn't good, and which was part of why I reached out during the week. Some of you. So I'm looking at how I'm dealing with the news without God. And without God, I make the situation way more about me. My perspective is completely skewed. I obsess. I'm totally stuck. And I, you know, it's just all about me. And you know, I want to help in the way I want to help. And, you know, I have a whole scene, lots of scenes of how I want it to play out. And it just, again, I'm ineffective. It's just about me. And with God, I ask God to please remove my selfishness and my fear and ask God for guidance on how I can best be of service to him. And, you know, I pause a lot. And when that happens, you know, answers come. And sometimes the answers that come aren't exactly what I want, as like last night. I wanted to manage and control and go over there and, you know, I'm sure some Al-Anon issues, which I've never been to an Al-Anon meeting, but I didn't. I was able to pause. This whole week has been, I've really just taken things slowly and really practiced the presence of God because, again, I'm telling you, I think this relapse really, at least for the moment, has smashed my ego. And, you know, I am humble, man, because I just see how quickly I just get to a really dark place. And I want to be of service to him. And I want to make whatever is going on in his life better. And I have to keep God, you know, I have to serve God and ask God who he would have me be in the situation, because it might not be what I think it should be. And today, for the moment, I accept that. So thanks.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Really appreciate that. It helps a lot as you share. It really helps a lot when each person talks specifically, maybe about like a certain situation or circumstance where they really, really relate to this going on. It really, really helps anchor in some of this stuff.
Hi, this is Kimberly.
Hi, Kimberly.
Hey, sweetie. I'm going to talk about question 15, faced with the first step, a self-imposed crisis you cannot evade. Are you now willing to seriously face the proposition either God is everything or he is nothing? So I answered, I continue to experience before and after I got clean how I am my own worst enemy. My thinking and emotions absolutely rule me, and so do other people. I continue to see how fear runs my life, and I just keep reacting all the time. One way I react is through food. As I continue to dig my own grave, box myself in the corner, spiral down misery lane, continue huge waves of depression and hopelessness where I wake up most days trying to figure out how to kill myself or why I shouldn't. I still can't say I'm willing to fearlessly face the proposition, but I am willing to strongly consider that my life would be different if I were on a different footing. Yes, I'm at a crossroads and I'm tired of being tired.
Thank you so much, Kimberly, for that share. And Kimberly, I don't know if you want to come back on the line and just share a little bit about your experience with, like, having, like, self-knowledge. Because I feel like you and many of the people who are on this call have lots of self-knowledge. And since the reading today is all about, you know, reason and how we have been, like, we just can't rely on any of the stuff that we already knew. I wondered if you or anybody else wants to speak about that.
Well, it is, I think that's probably one of the issues with people with time. And I have almost 30 years in Cocaine Anonymous. And so it's easy to rely on the knowledge aspect of it and really get away from the personal relationship side of it. You know, after a while, you know what to say, you know all the quotes, you know the whatever, but am I really, have I lost that sensitivity, that personalization? And the truth is, in many ways, I have. And in particular, looking at it in from the food angle, I get to see that there is absolutely no way I'm going to God for anything on this. I mean, it's total agnosticism, and that's exactly what I suffer from, chronic agnosticism. And it's interesting. Sometimes things aren't really huge in my life. It's the subtle stuff that kicks my ass. But add enough of those little subtle things together, and it's a big deal. You know, but I think that even behind all that is that I really need to be able to get honest with self, you know, and really what is and what isn't true in my life. And I think if that gets lost, then the rest of everything gets fuzzy. And it's certainly been eye-opening to sit with you, Deb, every week and do this, again, from a place of as a newcomer, which I always try to do. No matter how much knowledge I have, it's set aside. And like you said, if I come into this with old ideas, then where am I being open to hearing or learning anything new? So I need to do that, like you said, for a moment. Take it back later on, but just for right now. And I get to see that there is no God in my life in regard to my food issues. I do what I want, when I want, how I want. And I also get to see that in other areas of my life. It's really brought out where I'm incredibly falling short. And so now the issue becomes I'm a hypocrite. I'm a complete hypocrite that I can stand there with these years, but the truth is that my days are pretty tough, you know, and am I honest enough to say, you know what, I'm not there yet. You know, I need to back off from speaking. I need to back off from all this stuff and just really be a student right now and embrace that and develop a new relationship with God, because right now it's by a thread.
Thank you so much for that share. I think a lot of people relate to you, so I really appreciate you being the voice for a lot of folks out there. Who else would like to share?
This is Tammy in San Diego.
Hey, Tam.
Hey, I haven't shared in a while. I've been in silent mode. But I just want to, it's hard. It's really hard to share about some of this stuff. I don't know if this is kicking my butt, but I just really, thank you so much for sharing, Lynn. I am Lynn. So I go into these dark places, you know, and the bedevilment is, where things started kind of shifting for me, you know, because step one could be a lot of knowledge, you know, because it's all about the physical and it's about, you know, the mental obsession, which, you know, I get that. But I had to connect the dots with all the areas in my life that it's affecting, and it affects every area. I mean, I have been living my life with no God, you know. I mean, I've been looking at, and I always said, you know, this knowledge thing, that's why I want to kind of touch base, is, you know, the knowledge and the idea that, oh, if only I can get it back the way it was, you know, if only I can have that relationship with God. But clearly, that wasn't enough, you know. Something went wrong, and I need more than what I had, you know what I mean? And so I sell myself short again by thinking that if I, it only looks like that, and that's me thinking I know what it's supposed to look like again. And so in step two, a lot of it, my kind of the first step in step two for me is not so much believing in God, but I have to stop believing in me. In my ideas, and I have to think that I have to stop thinking that I know what's right, you know, or what I need to do in order for it to look like this. And I'm still just still scrambling trying to make it work, or still scrambling trying to not feel or think, you know, that's what I do. And there's this idea, and because I don't want to take up a lot of time, there's this idea that the prejudicism or whatever, the pre-ideas of, this idea that I think I've used up all my chances. And because, you know, I'm a relapser, and so it's like, God isn't going to be there because I fucked up so many damn times. You know what I mean? And so, it's this crazy idea, and I really need to let go of that idea. But, I need to stop believing in Tammy and start believing that there is a better solution, you know, that God is there. And then once I can let go of those ideas, then I can be free to having an idea. And I'm opening up to new ideas of what God is, because I try not to get into defining God. You know, you were talking about that in your last one, because I sell God short, always. I sell everything short. So anyway, so I just wanted to touch base, and so that's where I'm at. And you get, oh, and I, one more thing, I went to an OA meeting. I went to an OA meeting because I, because it just confirmed that I am on the right path. It was no solution, and it was sad. I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful for your group, the Deb, and I'm going to the other one, and everything, it just reaffirms that I'm on the right path, you know. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Love to hear from more folks, and also if anybody who hasn't spoken or who has spoken already wants to share about their experience with that meditation, with taking to meditation, God is nothing. So either sharing about one of your Idiot's Guide answers or sharing about your experience with that meditation.
Hey, this is Adela again.
Hi, Adela.
Hi. So I had a very similar experience to what you had. I almost felt like when I was in meditation and I was finding myself asking for God to allow me the space to not be there, because when I have come to rely so much on it, like it's like breathing, and so I actually felt like I couldn't breathe. But at the same time, I realized that is when my agnosticism comes in, is because it has become such a spontaneous event for me to rely upon God that without it, I really feel like, you know what I mean, like, it's scary, and I'm afraid of what's going to happen if I don't. But also, you know, realizing that my conception of God is finite. Every time I come up with a new conception of God, or I think I understand God a little bit better, it's a finite conception of God, and that God is infinite. God is everything. And I can't comprehend, like, my mind, you know, and just being smart, you know, I cannot comprehend what finite means. Because having, you know, gone to school and received an education, you know, the concept of finite is very, very scary. It's a very
thing. Infinite. You mean the concept of infinite? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Both, finite, but the concept of infinite is very, very scary as well, because it's never-ending, it's ongoing, it's everything, it's just, it's too big. And so I have to allow that space. Like, I have to get, you know, and I don't want to say that I, you know, have to create chaos or something like that to experience that. But that's really where my growth comes from, is by having those moments where it's between me and God, and realizing that I can't breathe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much for that share, Adela. Really, really appreciate that. Yeah, I totally relate to that. And in my, what I experience of being in my conscious contact space is, like I mentioned before, life's not perfect and I'm not perfect. But everything for me, including the fears that crop up, including the resentments, including the ways that I get off track, everything is an opportunity to me right now. Like, oh my gosh, this is actually a way that I can get closer to my Creator. So, like, whether I am really, really feeling in full connection, or whether I am, you know, in some kind of, like, spiritual runoff and have gotten off track, either way gets me closer to God. And that's why today I'm grateful that I am powerless over food and the way I act out around food, and my life is unmanageable. I'm grateful for that statement, because it's just this incredible opportunity to actually get closer to God. And yeah, so that's actually what that meditation does for me, is it makes me realize how much bigger God is than I've been treating, and how much more of a relationship I can start to build. Who else wants to share about their meditation experience? What about from Lauren or Deb K or Cami or Sue?
Hi, this is Deborah King.
Hi.
Hey. I guess when I'm thinking about this again, I realize how far off I am. God is not everything. And I have to learn with prayer and meditation where in those areas of my life that I think I'm all that. And I think I like being the director, and I like being in control. And I hate that I've lied to myself again. And I want to get more clear with what it looks like to have God be everything in my life. Because only then will everything be okay. It will be self-will one riot. I will be creating chaos. I will eat anything in my path. It will be all on my own merit. And I left myself. It's doom, like you said. And when I was doing the meditation, I literally got some anxiety about God being nothing. I could hardly breathe, like someone else mentioned. And yet I'm really not sure how to make God everything. I confess, I don't know, and I want to know. So the only thing I can do is to continue to ask him to reveal to me areas in my life where I'm lying, I'm cheating myself, and I'm a total mess. Reveal to me where you can be everything in my life. Just show me more. That's all I can ask. And that's it. I guess I'm still learning. Thank you for letting me share.
Beautiful. Thank you, Deb. Is someone on the line? Got a couple more shares. And if you want to ask a question, you can ask a question as well.
Hey, Deb, this is Katie G. May I share on question 17?
Sure.
So I guess I just really like what everybody's been sharing about being agnostic, and I know I've shared a lot about being agnostic with my job, and I always talk about, like, being agnostic with money and with work and with men, and, like, I really have seen the insanity at a lot deeper level. Like, I see that my way is not working, but it's also weird, and I don't know if somebody relates to this, but, like, so I'm like, okay, so my way of dealing with men isn't working because I don't have what I want. Like, I'm 36 and I've been dating on and off. I do online dating and was out of I've been out of a relationship for 3 months and I'm not in another relationship. And, like, I see, like, question 17A, like, my way of working, you know, in terms of solving this problem isn't working in my mind because the desires of my heart aren't filled. But it's like, I don't know, I just, like, it's really hard letting go of this area of my life because I feel like you shared, Deb, like, if I really let it go, then God's not going to, he's not going to take care of it. There's just no way. And just really feeling, like, the powerlessness around that. And, like, I see that the way I'm doing things is not working, and I know I have to change, but just feeling dumbfounded in terms of how. And, like, I know it's cultivating that relationship with God, but, like, but it just feels so not concrete enough for someone. Like, I want to know how to solve it all right now. So I don't know. I'm feeling really moved around that because I'm controlling, like, even the, like, powerlessness and unmanageability. So I don't know. That's it. Thanks.
Right. That's it. That's exactly it. It's self-willing, the spiritual growth. It's like I learn these concepts, and then I try to self-will what that looks like, and I try to kind of create the environment in my life so that it'll feel safe for me to trust God, which is working at complete cross purposes. Like, that's, like, not the point. So yeah, thank you for sharing that, Katie. Let's hear from a couple more people sharing your answers to the questions in the Idiot's Guide, sharing about your experience with the meditation, or if you want to just do a check-in right now and just share where you are at. I know some of you have been reaching out via email and been on all different ranges of struggling to experiencing some good stuff. Would love for you just to feel like you have a place to share that right now.
Hi, it's Lynn again.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Well, you know, I just wanted to share an experience that I had earlier this week, and it was about reaching out to this group as well as a couple of other people in my, quote, now friend circle from OA in the San Fernando Valley. But, you know, when I got this news about my friend, I immediately went to God and just said, okay, God, just please keep me grounded and you know, just what's next? And, you know, I really thought I was good. And then all of a sudden, the next day, I was at work and had my normal breakfast and just doing the next indicated thing. And just, I felt these feelings of hunger. I just really, I mean, strong discomfort. Started biting my nails a little or my nail polish, and, you know, I wanted food. I absolutely wanted food, and I paused and decided to reach out. I've reached out to a couple of you, and one person in particular has given me some tips on bookending and just reaching out to, you know, people, and so I added her on the list, and I added you, Deb, and Katie, I wish I had your email. I didn't have you on the list, so I need your email. But, you know, and Kimberly, and then some just people from OA that I used to check in with, because I'm doing things differently. I'm really trying to have freedom from food, and I'm not committing my food anymore. I'm really being more mindful about my food with God, and so I'm this abstinence is different. And so I reached out, and what happened was beautiful. And in that reach out was just, you know, I'm feeling hunger, and I don't think it's hunger. Things are going on, outside things are going on. And then in the next paragraph, I just paused and talked about that I was going to pause and practice the presence of God, and, you know, that just confirming that God is everything in that moment. And really, it was coming to believe in that moment, seeing my powerlessness and making that choice to believe in a power greater than myself by reaching out to my fellows. I just didn't know what else to do. And the cool thing was, you know, throughout the day, I got little interactions from people, and then other people. It was just back and forth, and it was just these God shots all day, and my hunger, it kind of diminished. And, you know, my feelings were still there, but God was still there too. And so the fellowship of this workshop is I'm really utilizing the fellowship of the workshop. And so I encourage everyone to reach out with that phone list. I love taking outreach calls or emails. And I just want to thank this group because, you know, I'm having a really nice experience with this group. And it made a really uncomfortable situation okay. I mean, I just knew that I was in there, my fellow's thoughts, and it reminded me to, you know, practice the presence of God, and you know, I made it through the day abstinently, and, you know, I continue to trudge. So that's it. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Lynn, thank you so much for that, and absolutely, like, on so many levels, thank you for that. I hope that more people use the fellowship of the group in that way. Awesome. And I will get you Katie's email.
She just texted me, so we're good. Thanks.
Who else wants to do a check-in or answer one of the questions to the Idiot's Guide? Okay, well, we'll take a burning desire, and if people are feeling complete, then we can absolutely end the meeting before 4 o'clock, no problem. Anybody have a burning desire? Let's give a few more moments. Okay. Well, it sounds like we're done for the day. I'm so excited to do step 3 next week. I'm going to meditate on how we want to do our third step, if we want to do something as a group on the phone or through Skype, or if we want to just everybody have their unique experience. I'm not sure. I'm going to pray on that. But it has just been so wonderful. Today's conversation was great. Thank you, everybody who shared and everybody who was there in spirit, who listens to this afterwards. And let's close the meeting with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you so much. to everyone who was on the call, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks, Deb.
Thanks.